AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am your host, Chip Flory, and we have a special guest with us right now, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Secretary Vilsack, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Chip.
Good. Okay. The Biden administration recently has put forth some efforts to protect workers from extreme heat. Talk about some of those details and who's going to be implementing those efforts.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing, Chip. If you think about this, oftentimes I think we don't really look at heat in the same way we look at hurricanes and tornadoes and floods. But the reality is that there are actually more deaths connected to heat than those other natural disasters. It's the leading cause of weather-related deaths, and it costs the economy $99 billion. And so the Biden administration is basically taking a look at the fact that we just recently broke records in terms of heat waves that we haven't seen since the Dust Bowl era, and are basically making sure that workplaces, both indoors and outdoors, are safe. And that certainly focuses on, for us, on farm workers, those folks who are out there in intense heat at times, picking the fruits and vegetables that we all enjoy. So making sure that there are adequate steps taken to protect farm workers from intense heat, whether it's making sure there's adequate water resources, breaks, things of that nature, to make sure that we keep our farm workers safe.
Well, and with the labor issues that we are having in the country right now, Secretary Vilsack, we've got to implement efforts that are going to keep those workers safe.
No, that's right. And again, these people work incredibly hard. And honestly, we need a Congress that basically at the end of the day finds the will and the courage to get immigration reform passed so that we have a stable and secure workforce. But in the meantime, the workforce we have, we want to make sure we keep it. And we want to make sure those folks are safe and that we don't lose folks either from heat or from COVID.
Yeah. And the way the situation is set up, it looks like we're going to be dealing with some heat and some drought conditions out at least Denver westward again through the into 2022. And there is some relief for the costs associated with drought in the reconciliation bill, isn't there?
There is. There's an effort to try to provide resources to make our system more resilient, to create the capacity to respond to these weather conditions and try to mitigate and adapt and reduce the impact of them. But in the meantime, waiting for Congress to get that work done, we've also used some of the American Rescue Plan resources to provide compensation, if you will, reimbursement to farm workers, to those who work in meatpacking facilities for the expenses they incurred during COVID. So there are a multitude of ways in which we're trying to provide help and assistance.
Okay, very good. The last time we talked, you were just a couple of days away from leaving for Italy for the G20 Ag Ministers meeting. What did you learn, and what did you bring home with you?
Well, the key here, Chip, is for me to have been able to make the case to the to my fellow ministers and secretaries that there are multiple ways to get to where we need to get to on climate. I know our friends in the EU have a particular way, the Farm to Fork program. That's their way. It's not the only way. We believe here in the U.S. that there needs to be a focus on productivity. There needs to be a focus on innovation and technology. There needs to be a focus on climate smart agriculture through voluntary adoption and implementation by farmers and ranchers. There needs to be incentives to reduce the financial risk to farmers and producers from embracing technologies and techniques that we know will work. That's our approach, and we wanted to make sure the rest of the world understood that there were multiple ways to get to the same destination. And we also wanted to develop, frankly, a coalition of countries like the United States, like Brazil, who understand and appreciate that at the end of the day, you can't sacrifice productivity to be able to respond to climate change. You have to be able to respond to climate change and continue to be more productive. That's a challenge, but I think we in the U.S. believe that we're up to that challenge.
You know, Europe's and the European Union's hesitancy to adopt some of the technology around farming has been there for a long time. Is there any sign that they may start to adopt the technologies that we're using here on a quicker pace?
You know, that's a great question, Chip. And one of the things that was interesting was that folks in the EU are beginning to distinguish and differentiate between genetically modified approaches to crop development and gene editing approaches. I think there seems to be a more interest and potential willingness to embrace gene editing than there was GMO technology. And that's, I think, a positive because we know that gene editing at the end of the day could be a significant force in enabling us to have a more resilient food system. So I was pleased to see that. We'll see if it actually translates, as you say, into more rapid adoption and approval of imports and so forth that use that technology.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. What do you hope to see from the food system summit that is taking place at the UN?
Well, I just actually with Samantha Power, who's the administrator at USAID, we just gave our presentation on behalf of the U.S. And it's essentially focused on this, making sure that countries know that they're welcome to join us in this coalition focused on sustainable productivity growth, and that they also are willing to join us in our effort to focus on innovation and accelerate innovation. There's a effort that the United States started with the United Arab Emirates, and now a number of countries, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 13, 14 countries, have joined forces to advance the notion of research and development and innovation. We want to make sure that we extend that invitation to the rest of the world. So hopefully from the food summit leading up to COP26, we see greater acknowledgement, greater acceptance, greater willingness to be parts of these coalitions that focus on productivity, growth, technology, and innovation.
Okay, good, good, good. I know that Midwest farmers are very encouraged by your defense of the technology that we've got to work out in farm country. And I know that they're happy with the $1 billion in support for biofuels and the reconciliation bill. But when they see the hundreds of billions of dollars in the reconciliation bill to support EVs, they start to feel like maybe biofuels have been left behind on this a bit. Secretary Vilsack, what's your message to them on that?
Well, I think they have to look at the totality of all this. I mean, if you basically total up the amount of money and assistance that the industry has been provided over the last 20 years with reference to the renewable fuel standard, infrastructure investments and alike, you would see that that we're very much on par, if you will, with expected investments in electric vehicles. A couple of things, Chip. Number one, the bill also contains a fairly significant tax credit that's focused on aviation biofuel. Now, that's a potential 35, 36 billion gallon industry by the year 2050. That's a huge opportunity for us to literally double what we're currently doing on the ground in terms of biofuels. That's a pretty significant investment. It's a very, very generous tax credit that's going to accelerate that effort. Secondly, there's additional resources that we're providing through the American Rescue Plan in addition to what's contained in the in the reconciliation plan and the infrastructure plan. So people have to understand and appreciate that the biofuel industry is a mature industry versus the EV industry, which is a maturing industry. There are different places of development. So naturally, you're going to see more resources and more attention focused on the new kid on the block, on the shiny new object. But at the end of the day, there's still significant support to the biofuel industry in the face of significant opposition, by the way. It's not as if every member of Congress thinks the biofuel industry is the best thing since sliced bread. We know there are people out there that are constantly looking for ways, by virtue of the oil industry, to sort of cut the legs out from under the RFS and the system. Right. So the fact that there's resources, the fact that there's support for this, I think is an ongoing indication of support for the biofuel industry and a recognition that it plays an integral role, if you will, in climate, because it's going to be a low emission fuel that will allow us to get higher octane, better mileage. That's also good for the climate.
Okay. In the present, we've got the renewable fuel standard and the RVOs, the blending obligations. We're waiting for the proposals on that. Senator Grassley from our state is suggesting that they're coming our way by Friday afternoon. Any indication that will be the case?
You know, Senator Grassley may have a better crystal ball than I have. I think at the end of the day, they'll come when the EPA is ready. But at the end of the day, Chip, I think what people have to understand about the RFS is the most important thing to it is stability. The most important, in my view, the most important thing is to be able to count on the numbers that you're provided. And I contrast that to the previous administration that basically gave you a number and then basically through a series of waivers reduced that number. And so there was always instability, always uncertainty. I think my Administrator Reagan, what his job is, he really wants to make sure that the numbers are solid, make sure that they are supported by the facts and that they are real, that there isn't going to be a liberal use of the waiver process that will basically make those numbers not real. I think the industry should understand and appreciate that this is an administrator who really believes in the stability and the transparency of this system, which we haven't seen for a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah. The transparency and the stability issues, I get that, but that doesn't rule out the potential of coming in below 15 billion gallons in corn-based ethanol in the RFS. Is that where you see this going?
I don't know what the numbers will be, but what I do know is that it's fair to say that there were some significant disruptions during 20 and 21 as a result of the pandemic, certainly during 20, significant disruptions. And what that and the impact that the pandemic had on numbers, the administrator would know, the EPA would know. But at the end of the day, I'm going to look for ways in which we at USDA can provide help and assistance. That's why we are prepared to provide $700 million of assistance now and additional resources above and beyond that for infrastructure to expand the capacity to get higher blends out there to consumers. We're going to continue to do what we can at USDA to support this industry.
Okay. Some of the feedback that I've gotten from farmers, Secretary Vilsack, I'll just be very blunt with it. They don't believe that President Biden is the supporter for biofuels like candidate Biden was. Do you think that is true?
I think that's unfair. Really, I think that is really unfair.
Okay.
And I'll tell you for three reasons. Number one, the fact that President Biden was, during the course of the campaign, said very clearly that he was not in favor of waivers. President Trump used waivers very liberally and undercut the stability of the entire RFS system. There was never a clear understanding of what the numbers would actually be because those waivers were given to just about any large oil company that requested them. So number one, President Biden is remaining true to his word on waivers. Two, President Biden sees the opportunity for growth in this industry. Where was the growth opportunity in the previous administration? The growth industry, obviously, is aviation fuel. We're talking about a doubling of production here.
Yeah.
Number three, in both the American Rescue Plan and the resources being made available through the Biden administration's USDA and in the Build Back Better effort, there is resources and support for the industry. So I have a hard time understanding what that's all about. It's maybe just politics as usual, which is unfortunate, but I don't think it's fair to the president, honestly. And can continue to look for ways in which we can provide help and assistance. And I think there'll be greater stability and more support in this administration than the previous administration. Of that, I am very confident.
Okay, you make good points, solid points, absolutely. More feedback. There is high anxiety over how the Build Back Better plan is going to be paid for and the tax plans. And I know that you are well aware of the issue and some of the criticisms that you have received from farm organizations about your take on the tax plan. The big concern is that you're not focused enough on the 20% that produce 80% of the food that we consume in this country when it comes to the tax plan. What's your response to that?
Well, Chip, the Environmental Economic Research Service of USDA just came out with a report just in the last couple of days on this issue. And again, basically indicated that of all the farms in the United States of America, the only farms that will be impacted by this is like roughly 1.1% of the farms in the country would be impacted by the stepped up basis issue. 1.1%. Now, I understand and appreciate the criticism that I've gotten, but the reality is the criticism is based on a incomplete analysis of the tax proposal. It's one thing if what was proposed was that the only folks who qualify for the exemption, if you will, are those whose family continue to own and operate the farm. But they've forgotten, in their calculations and review, they've forgotten about the exemption levels of $1 million per person, $2 million per couple. If there's a homestead, $2.5 million per couple. When you apply that combined with the exemption for owner and operator, you get 98% of the farms, almost 99% of the farms, not covered by this. So that's the reason. And again, who is covered? It's the Tom Vilsacks of the world. It's the people who own land and who don't have sons and daughters who are going to be interested in farming the land, who have it as an investment, just like stocks and bonds, and it's appreciated over time through no particular effort on my part. And at the end of the time, when I die, is it fair for my kids to get a huge tax break? Or is it better for my kids to pay their fair share, and in doing so, allow families across the United States to have access to a child credit that makes it easier for working families, middle-class families, including farm families, to be able to support their children? Is it better for the opportunity to have more affordable college for millions of kids? Or is it better for Tom Vilsack and his kids to have a huge tax break? I mean, that's at the end of the day what this is all about. And I appreciate, you know, the concern that folks have because it, I think it goes to a deeper issue. And I understand that issue. And you have to respect this part of it, which is that there's a lack of trust here. And at the end of the day, I think all of us in politics, we've really got to work hard to reestablish trust between us and the people we serve.
Wow.
And yeah. I think there's far too much division in this country, far too much us versus them in this country. And the result, of course, is that we don't get anything done. I mean, we're talking about a reconciliation plan. We're talking about a Build Back Better plan. We're talking about infrastructure improvements that everybody in the countryside knows are necessary. But will they pass? Will they get done? Will partisan differences, will differences within party cause it, an inability for these folks to get it passed? That's open right now. And it's, again, that us versus them, political divisions. Yeah. Not getting much stuff done, which feeds into the mistrust, which in turn makes it more difficult for people to see things and to understand what this is truly all about. And I think at the end of the day, I think I should pay tax. I don't think a family farm, a farmer who owns and operates a farm and whose kids want to own and operate the farm, I don't think they should pay the tax. And that's the reason we pressed hard when this was put forward to make sure there was an exemption. And there is for 98.9% of farms.
Very good. Secretary Vilsack, we certainly appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
You bet.